Jesus longs to talk with his loved ones about his death, but that is a talk they do not want to have. Now, perhaps we might forgive his family and his friends for this. After all, Jesus was in the prime of his life, and when a young man, maybe about my age, when he carries on and on about this wretched mortal coil and being ready to meet his maker, one thinks it morbid and unseemly. One thinks maybe even that a screw has come loose. So when Jesus tells his disciples that he is going to die, Peter protests. Peter says, "God forbid it, Lord. This must never happen to you." Jesus invites his kin and his closest companions into a conversation they show themselves too uncomfortable to have. Jesus offers them what is a precious gift, a gift to share with another in the work of meaning-making, in the measuring out of days, in the weighing of decisions, in the wiping away of tears, in the gentle sifting of unrest and peace through which firmer resolve and truer knowing come to be. Jesus offers them what is a precious gift, and they refuse it. They refuse it, saying, "God forbid." Saying, in essence, "Oh, Mom, you aren't going to die." Saying, "Dad, not at Thanksgiving dinner, huh?" Saying, "Oh, but Grandma, you are such a young 96. Saying, "Honey, you've just got to hold on for this FDA trial." Jesus longs to talk with his loved ones about his death, but that is a talk they do not want to have. And it's not as if he sits down beside some stranger on the subway and says, "Okay, do not resuscitate orders. What thinkest thou?" No, he is among intimates. He's among friends who share the same faith. And their religion has left them stiff and nervous. For all the time they have spent hanging around Jesus, well, they can handle feeding the poor, and they can handle fighting for justice. But when it comes to having feelings, sharing their own, or holding space for someone else's, they seem ill-prepared. They are not prepared to put down the 10-foot pole that keeps at bay anyone who would see their guarded hearts in the state they really are in. That is, to see them trembling. Trembling at the thought of losing this one you love. See them scared. Scared and unable or unwilling to explore that fear, because being in touch with painful emotions will seriously disrupt your life, and who has time for that? See them in denial and angry because you do not understand. You haven't done the work, the self-work, and you do not understand the cauldron of regrets. And if I had onlys, and I wish I hads, that are boiling up inside. My grandmother passed away a year ago this August, and it was not a good death. She smoked 2 packs a day for 50 years, and she paid no mind to anyone's protests. Even when she had developed a pretty debilitating case of COPD, she was, for a time, she was too embarrassed to seek treatment or to so much as name her disease as such. She was embarrassed by the kind of disease she had and what she thought that said about her. When she eventually went on oxygen, but before it was that even taking a few steps would leave her out of breath, she refused to be seen in public with her tank in tow. And she became more and more reclusive. She would not venture out to birthday parties or holiday dinners or even allow that the festivities be brought to her. And in whatever ways our family was and absolutely is dysfunctional, papering over submerged hostilities with a veneer of pleasantness, that was not our style. We are Italians, and as an Italian, you know instead that it's better to accidentally elbow the other person while at the antipasti platter. And as they struggle not to choke on the olive pit they've almost just inhaled, you just blurt out your grievances before God and everybody, and you have at it without holding back. You yell a lot, and there is a great catharsis, and then you kiss and make up. But even our tribe, even we, not one of us who ever had a thought we left unexpressed, even we could not and would not discuss the fact of Nana's dying with any kind of openness at all. My grandmother, she wanted to move in with my aunt, but she would never say so. My aunt did not want my grandmother to move in with her, but would never say so. After one of her especially bad bouts in the hospital, some in the family who had power of attorney, they sold her condo and everything in it without consulting her. They knew full well that she would never have wished to go into a nursing home, but they had plausible deniability because, again, none of us had ever dared unleash the torrent of pain by talking about this. So in addition to feeling ashamed and alone, Nana now felt betrayed and all the more embittered. And everyone else experienced her as more and more curmudgeonly, mean, and emotionally taxing. And I have to say, for my part, there was no practicing what I preach. I was not a pastor seeing and addressing these dynamics with tenderness. Nor was I even, as a Christian, spiritually attuned. I needed to say and could not say what she and what all of us needed to say but could not say, which was some terrible, beautiful, faltering jumble of, "I'm sorry," and "I forgive you," and "I love you," and "goodbye." The parts of us that were all, at the end of the day, frightened animals, those parts never unburrowed. Our souls never showed themselves, not until it was too late. And I don't know, maybe though she was only a whisper of herself and laid there intubated and unresponsive, maybe even yet there was some great unclenching of spirit. Maybe there was a peace she felt when we were finally all together. Maybe the honesty of sharing then, at long last, maybe it was palpable and healing in a way beyond what we could sense. But it did not seem to me to be a good death. Jesus, like so many, he longs to talk with his loved ones about his death, but that is a talk they do not want to have. Jesus, like so many, he wants to offer to his kin and closest companions what is a precious gift. And the gift is something more than what can quite be contained within a will or an advanced directive. The gift is something that wills and advance directives, which you should do, by the way, but the gift is something that wills and advance directives as tools of discernment do empower us to give, insofar as they clarify and channel our deepest intuitions about what counts. But the gift Jesus and so many want to offer is of an altogether different order than peace of mind, or making it easy on those you care for by dotting the I's and crossing the T's and getting your ducks in a row. The gift Jesus, like so many, wants to offer, it's an invitation into a sort of spiritual stock-taking. Almost of a chewing on, altogether, a chewing on that old question, how is it with your soul? How is it with your soul? The gift Jesus, like so many, wants to offer is akin to that T.S. Eliot line about having the experience but missing the meaning. The gift Jesus, like so many, wants to offer is an invitation to share in discovering the shape and the sense and the story and the meaning in the steady march of days. Jesus invites his loved ones to look upon his death because he believes that death can shine light back on his life. And this is a gift that there is no such thing as being too young or too old to bestow. Because to talk about meaning in the light of mortality, to talk about death just is to talk about all the days leading up to death. It is talk about the magnificence and the fragility of our bodies. It is talk about what God is teaching us about our own dignity and our own real dependency. It's to talk about our favorite foods and about the songs we sing in the shower, about the books we have read and read over and again, and whether and how we shall live if we cannot revel in those tastes and in that music and in the words. Talk of death is talk about loneliness, about fear. It's talk about limitations, about which ones we should break through and which ones we should bend to. It's talk about the forgiveness we ache to grant. It's talk about the reconciliation that we must make. Talk about death is talk about gratitude and joy and blessing. Jesus longs to talk with his loved ones about his death, because to talk about death just is to talk about life. To talk about death is to talk about life. It is to talk about the ones with whom we have shared our lives. It's to talk about what we have made of our lives or dreamt to make of our lives. It's to talk about what we might have made of our lives but did not. It's to talk about what we have learned in our lives. For Jesus and for so many, to talk of death is to talk of what is truest about ourselves. What we would miss. The sweet remembrances, the sad regrets, the passions and the pains, the tears we have shed, the love we have shared. To talk about our deaths is to talk about who we are, who we hope to be, how we want to live on, even when we live no longer. For Jesus and for so many, to talk with his loved ones about his death, to talk about the life his death casts light back upon, to talk with others in this way is ultimately to claim that life is not something you have to lose, but is something that as you share, you can give away. Amen.